Thank you very much. As a means of kind of setting the context for this evening, I might talk about that we recognize, and I think all of us do, that any time that you're looking at making major changes in an organization, particularly when you're looking at making changes within the high school environment, it is at best threatening and always very, very difficult. We've been having school for a lot of years, and it's very difficult to look at what we're doing and try to identify the things that maybe would make us better and then to make those changes. So I think the group who's been working on this recognizes that very, very clearly, that there is always resistance to change, and that, in fact, implementing the things that we're talking about and the things that finally get into the redesign will be a difficult process, but one from which we can gain a great deal. Lastly, I would like to also recognize that there are certainly some flashpoints within the high school redesign, and this is true, and it's been interesting because I've spent a lot of time lately with superintendents from other school districts like ours, and they all express very much the same kinds of concerns that we hear as we begin to really look at our high schools. And I might recognize some of those up front, and they're things that our design teams have been very, very aware of as they go through. I think certainly one major issue always as we begin to look at a school district that has been as successful as Madison has and with the kind of high schools that we've had is as we begin to address our students who are not being successful, are we in fact taking resources away from our students who are very, very high flyers? And are we in a sense dumbing down the curriculum in order to serve the needs of our children who are struggling to be successful in high school? And that we certainly recognize that that's one of the major flashpoints as we begin to look at this. And I said, and it mirrors the conversations that I've been having with other superintendents around the nation as they struggle with the exact same issues that we are. There's also always concern, particularly in our school district, where our high schools have been almost completely autonomous in terms of the way they've developed and have really been able to develop in a way that was really tried to mirror a lot that was needed in their own individual communities. If we look at doing things more consistently across the school district, will our schools lose their individuality? And so that's certainly one concern that I know the design team is thinking about and looking at as they go forward, is where are the places that we should be consistent? So if I, as a parent, and moving to Madison, that there are things that I should be assured would happen for my child regardless of where I go to school. Those are things that I already know are going to happen. How do you balance that kind of consistency that is important with the kind of individuality that allows our high schools and our other schools to serve their own individual communities, which are very, very different? And then as we have become more and more diverse, how do we effectively address the wide range of cultures that we have in our school district? We talk a lot about our diversity, and we think about our diversity really generally in terms of three major ethnic groups, but that doesn't really represent our school district. We speak in our school district, there are over 60 different home languages spoken in our school district. Many of those represent very, very different cultures to each other. So as we learn to work together from a very wide range of cultures and beliefs and values, how do we do that and still retain what, in a sense, has made our schools what they are, and try to inculcate in our children the kind of values that they need to truly be successful in our country? So those are all challenges that the team is very, very aware of as we go forward, and those are flashpoints that we know exist. Recognizing that as we move forward, change is always difficult, and there will certainly be issues as we try to make those changes. So having kind of set the stage, I will turn it over to Pam and her team to go.
Thank you very much.
And before I begin, I would like to make certain that you all have met or are about to meet Colleen Ansrud. Colleen is the planner for the secondary level, and has been kind enough to be with us along the way as we put this PowerPoint together.
Would you mind introducing our principals for our viewing audience?
I would love to. Next to Colleen is Alan Harris, the principal at East, Joe Gothard at La Follette, Bruce Dahman at Memorial, and Ed Holmes at West, and Sally Schultz at Shabazz. And I'd like to thank the board for having us here this evening. We felt it was very important that we have this conversation, that we have an opportunity to not only give you a sense of where we have been in our conversations, but also where we would like to go. And as we began the work, we started with the district vision and have not strayed, I might add, from that vision, that all students have the academic and interpersonal skills to become independent learners capable of making informed decisions in our multicultural world. I think that that's a broad charge, an incredibly important charge, and certainly as you look at it and look at the other district vision statements, a clear message to the that we've gotten from you, the board, that has allowed us to develop the framework around learning, engagement, and relationships. Those three things are the basis for that. We also kept in mind the district's approach that in pursuit of this vision, we will establish and maintain a culture that builds and values relationships. We will provide a culturally relevant and rigorous curriculum, employ and retain highly competent and diverse staff, and use our resources efficiently and strategically. And I might add to that, because I think that's been very much on the mind of the board, and use those resources equitably as well. Earlier in our work, in a report to the board, Superintendent Rainwater had set the tone for our discussions, that the purpose of high school is to ensure that all of our students leave ready for college, jobs, and civic involvement. Our traditional, comprehensive high schools today look and feel much like they have for generations. However, the world our students will live and work in has changed dramatically, and we have kept that dramatic change in mind as we have had our conversations. So what issues are we trying to solve by redesigning our high schools? We looked at the four. We narrowed it down to the four that we have listed. We want to work to solve these issues, but we want that work to continue to provide appropriate growth for all of our students. So as we look at shifting, whether it be shifting in curriculum, shifting in organization, we are keeping in mind that we want this design to meet the needs of everyone who's currently in our high schools and beyond. But we are looking at the achievement gap that exists between students of color and white students. We want to eliminate predictability factors for success based upon socioeconomic status and race. And we want to take a look at the lower graduation rate for children of color, low-income students, and students with disabilities. And then, on a broader scale, we want to make certain that our graduates have skills to compete in the 21st century. And I will talk a little bit more about those 21st century skills as we move along. One of the things that I mentioned is that we want this design to speak to all, to improve the achievement of all. And that doesn't mean that we lower the top to make the bottom work better. We lift the whole organization up. And I think you've seen this before, but I certainly wanted it to go out to the broader audience tonight as well. This is our cohort graduation rates. And by cohort, we looked at those who joined us in ninth grade and remained with us through 12th grade. And I think it's very critical to notice that, and this starts in 1995 and works its way to the present, that as one group, through a lot of interventions and a lot of retooling, as we began to address the needs of one group, the needs of all were addressed as well. And so every group has improved over that timeline. and some of them rather dramatically, I might add. And I'm sure it's hard to see this at home for people, but for example, our African-American graduation rate in 95 was at 46% and has moved to 78% today. So again, that's okay. Again, it's just important to note that we're paying attention to all kinds of students, all kinds of student needs as we look at our high schools today. Now back to the 21st century skills, because I think this is kind of the new frontier. This is the there are a lot of things we're going to, a lot of deficits we're looking at, a lot of gaps that we're looking at. But I think for all of us, when we got to this part of the conversation, it was really exciting to think about what is it that our students today are going to have to be able to do. And we know that the technological changes are incredibly fast-paced, that knowledge just increases exponentially, and that certainly the technology plays a big, big part in how much information is available. And one of the things that our students are going to have to be able to do is, to borrow a phrase from the university, sift and winnow through all of that ever-increasing knowledge. Then there's global competition and the global market, whether it be economic, the multiple languages that are utilized in today's global world. And we really need to help our students be prepared for not only the global market, but the fact that they may be working with, in whatever occupation they are in, with a wide, wide range of individuals coming from many, many backgrounds. The world is just wonderfully different these days. And then rising workforce requirements. There are employers who have certainly gone on record saying that even if it is an entry-level position that doesn't necessarily call for, you know, in the advertisement, a college degree, the skills, the analytical skills, the ability to communicate, to get along, to collaborate are key skills for the 21st century. And we want to make certain that all of our students have those skills. Certainly, just to break them down a little bit more, the notion of all the information, all the communication, the various ways in which technology has impacted not only on our daily lives, but certainly on our economic lives as well. We need to help our students with critical thinking skills, not only as they analyze the work that they are currently doing, but that is also a skill that will be very important in their future. Communication, whether it be written, oral, or technological, again, a very, very critical skill, as is collaboration. The notion of teamwork, the ability to discuss, collaborate, analyze together, come to plans, and bring those plans to fruition is a very critical 21st century skill. Talked about global awareness already, and then just the notion of business, economic, and civic literacy, very, very key for our kids. So here is where we are. We've spent the past year talking. I think and communicating, that's certainly a commodity that's very, very critical when you do something like this, to take the time necessary to talk, communicate, make certain that everybody is utilizing the same definitions for things, kind of coming together. And Art mentioned the fear that's out there about our schools losing their individual personalities. Our conversations have led us to a wonderful place where we recognize the strengths of our high schools, where we recognize the strengths of our high school leaders, but also to a place where I think we all feel very, very comfortable in sharing best practice, good information, supporting one another. I remember shortly after Memorial went through its Smaller Learning Communities grant, and we were getting going, and I got a call from West High School asking if I would come and address the West faculty. That was the first time that anybody could remember that high schools had shared information across the city. And it was a marvelous experience for me. It was, and I think, a good experience for West. And that's the kind of collaboration that we can model for our teachers, that we can model for our students, and we have really enjoyed this opportunity to share all the things that our high schools do well. So we've met monthly. We've reflected, we've discussed, we've strategized ways to refine our high schools. And then we spent a lot of time establishing goals, and I will be sharing those goals with you.
Let me ask a quick question.
Absolutely.
Are there more? I can't remember the makeup of the group. Is there more than principals?
Teaching and learning, Lisa Wachtel has joined us. On occasion, Jack Jorgensen has at least sent a message and thoughts our way. We also have three individuals from UW-Madison, two from the Ed Leadership Group, and one from Curriculum and Instruction that have been very, very good people to have on board with us. They bring with them the ability to assign graduate students to analyze some of the things that we need. And I'll share with you some information about that later on in the report.
Thank you.
Lucy.
To follow up on that question, are the alternative programs involved in this?
Yes. We have Sally on board, and then Ann Fisher is going to start joining us on a regular basis now. We have a lot to learn from our alternative partners.
That was sort of my line of thinking.
Yes,
so thank you.
Absolutely. And here's our goals. Goal number one, that all high schools will create environments that foster student connections to adult staff, improve means of monitoring student progress, and provide academic and other supports when needed. Now, if you take a look at that and you read it and you think, well, yeah, that's what high schools do, we're talking about the deliberateness of each of those pieces, making certain that we translate that to every kind of kid, to every kind of student need. The academic and other supports, other is there, because for some students, academics are fine. Social issues are a challenge. And so we want to look across all the spectrums that our high schools deal with on a daily basis. Goal number two, all high schools will elevate the academic performance and graduation and post-secondary enrollment rates of all students, but especially Black, Hispanic, and low-income students. Goal number three, all high schools will develop a systemic early intervention program that helps students attain proficiency in reading, English, language arts, and mathematics by the end of 10th grade. We wanted very much to respond to the board goals, but in addition, it's incredibly clear to all of us that if a high school student is having difficulty reading, then the challenge, not only to that student, but also to those around him or her, to make the curriculum accessible to that student are huge. So the whole notion of literacy flows through all of our conversations, the importance of literacy. Goal number four, all high school staff will grow in capacity to effectively deliver academically rigorous curriculum and instruction through professional development opportunities, support structures, peer collaboration, and designated roles along the line of coaching, which is started this year to a much, much greater degree at the elementary level. We're looking at the role of the learning coordinator at the middle school as a coaching role or a conduit role between teaching and learning initiatives and the schools. And we feel that there's a strong need for that at the high schools as well. And this evening, some of the high school principals may share with you their literacy coaches and that how that's going. But professional development, the constant updating, the changing of practice, the refining of what people do in the classroom is really the crux of high school reform. It comes down to the classroom. So that's why this goal is in there. And then goal number 5, all high schools will increase the level of participation in advanced or accelerated courses or other avenues that lead to entering post-secondary education, especially for Black, Hispanic, and low-income students. We do not presume with this goal that post-secondary education is the only course of action that we are recommending. There are lots of ways to enter the adult world, but we want to make certain that all of our students are poised to do whatever they wish at the end of high school. We want no barrier to a student who may decide to do post-secondary or may decide to go into the world of work or may decide some other course of action. As we were going through the goals and developing our thoughts and having these conversations, the U.S. Department of Education opened or reopened their Smaller Learning Communities grant competition. And we chose to apply for that because it was consistent with the conversation that we'd been having around our goals. And as you all know, we were not successful at that point in time. But it was an important process for us because as we put our thoughts together on paper for the grant, we had almost an epiphany. We pulled together teacher representatives from the 4 large high schools. And because we knew we wanted more than just that one writer's voice, we also utilized an interactive software program development called Moodle. And so as we wrote, that information could go back electronically to a team at the high schools. Some of those teams met together, looked at the work together, critiqued the work together. Other people were already on break somewhere but wanted to be involved and would do it individually. And we got a tremendous amount of teacher feedback that way. But the epiphany that we had, or the sheer joy, and I don't use that word lightly, that came from that opportunity for teachers to talk across schools, to hear from one another. The first morning, all I could hear was, "You do that? You do that?" It was a wonderful opportunity to bring like-minded people together and to really begin to collaborate. And we have taken that strategy, and we are continuing it on into this year. One of the things we also did for the grant that was very important, and this is where our graduate student group is involved. All high school students, and this includes Shabazz, participated in the High School Survey of Student Engagement, an instrument that was developed by the University of Indiana, and all of our kids took it. So we ended up with about 7,500 responses. And I've got a couple examples in the PowerPoint. But this morning, professor and his class, who have been working with Indiana, because the original survey did not disaggregate the data in the way that we are used to as a district. And so we, through Indiana and ourselves, we've been able to get the kind of information that we wanted and certainly that you will want. And I would like your permission or your invitation to return with that as a kind of amendment to the report, because it's absolutely fascinating information. But let me show you just a couple of examples. And what I did here was just ran to give you kind of a range in a sense. And I'll point out, we didn't want to name everybody tonight, but I will point out the obvious outlier on the far left, and that's Shabazz. And Shabazz is kind of our bellwether in terms of how kids can feel about their educational environment. So that's Shabazz. And these are strong numbers. I was tickled by the Shabazz propensity to strongly agree. I mean, if they like it, they like it. The rest of the group sneaks up on it a little bit more. They strongly agree, but they agree. They're much more comfortable with agree. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And while we can feel good about these percentages, remember that there are two other categories not up there, the disagree and strongly disagree, which constitutes, in some cases, 35, 40% of the kids. So that's this information is very, very important to us. The student voice is something we all agreed on immediately, was something we wanted to capture, and we think this survey in the end will do that for us. So it goes all the... Arlene.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
How many total students responded across all 500?
It's about 7,500. I don't have the exact number, but it was a substantial number. And one of the things that we promised kids when we gave it was we would be back to them with their responses, with the information, so they could get a sense of how people are feeling, because a lot of our student groups across the district are very interested in making their world better, better for everybody. So we wanted to give them that feedback.
How long before you think you'll be coming
now
back?
That we, this morning, got the right analysis, I'd say we, and I'll, as we hit the timeline, I'll talk about it, but within the next 2 months.
Great.
Will you be providing this the same... I assume when you give this to the board, it's not just going to be broken down in terms of percentages for the schools, but percentages for groups, for incomes, for races.
Exactly.
Is that information also going to be provided to the students?
Yes.
Thank you.
You bet.
And this survey instrument was used by a university faculty member and their grad students?
They're helping us analyze. And we went through the appropriate procedures in terms of Kurt Kiefer's shop, permission, that kind of thing.
I'm actually thinking about the human subject
yes.
protocols that are
that was reviewed by Kurt.
And I think the university also. We worked together on all those. So
yes.
I'm pretty sure it was reviewed.
We did. We had that conversation, but be happy to entertain any details you'd like to talk about.
In this case, they only did statistical analysis of existing data. They had no identifiers or anything. So
true. The range of questions. I think it's very important. The survey looks at engagement in a number of domains. It looks at cognitive engagement, it looks at social engagement, it looks at personal engagement. And, you can get a sense that for a lot of kids, at least one adult in this school knows me. For a lot of kids, apparently no one does. So those are the kinds of things that as we flesh out a design, this information is going to be very important to us. And it talks about being challenged academically. It talks, I mean, the number of questions around each domain really gets to the heart of a number of, I think, really important issues to all of us. So we will, again, bring that information back to you in a much more readable and more detailed form. When we were last summer, late spring, we did hold some building-based listening sessions at each high school. East High School utilized the information that it gathered during the Vision 2012 endeavor. And we also did hold one district-wide listening session at Wright Middle School that essentially talked about or presented information about sort of the direction we were taking for small learning communities and solicited feedback. I would say there were approximately 40 people there that evening. And this is what I talked about, to carry on this notion of collaboration across the district. We now have in place at each high school innovation teams, and this also includes Shabazz, 5 to 6 members from each of the high schools. Colleen is facilitating their meetings, and after this evening, we will have a meeting with all members to go over this PowerPoint, to talk about the design elements that are yet to come. They're later on in the presentation. We are also sending one to two members of each innovation team to the National Staff Development Conference. And Colleen's done a marvelous job of figuring out how we will deploy those individuals so we can cover all of the sessions and bring that information back in a coherent and cohesive way that can inform the work of all of us. So as we move forward to put the goals, those 5 goals into place, we put forward in our conversations the following redesign elements. And please note that the intent of all of us is to implement the elements consistently across the district. But that doesn't mean that we will be having the same structure, the same, all the things that people hold dear about our high schools and Shabazz are things that will remain. Their personalities will remain. We want people to get to a final place, a consistent final place, but they can get there in a whole variety of ways. And as we go through the elements, I'll show you how that can happen. The following elements of our redesign do align with the district framework and have been developed in concert with educational services, student services, and teaching and learning. We've talked before to you this year about the collaboration and that's going on across the various departments and divisions in our district, and it's wonderful to have the interest and the level of resources that we can share with one another. So under relationships, here are the elements that we feel are very, very critical. And the examples underneath are exactly that. They're things we've talked about. They're examples. They are certainly not inclusive at all. There are many, many more to come. And this is where our design teams, our innovation teams will come into play. We feel it's critical that there be a lot of attention paid to freshman transition and orientation activities, including things, for example, that connections be made with eighth graders earlier and earlier. If eighth graders are going to come into a school where the environment has been structured in such a way that there are communities within that environment or structures that lend themselves to better communication, that those structures need to be made, that eighth graders need to be aware of how that's going to operate, perhaps meet some of the people that they're going to that are going to be part of their ninth grade lives. So we want to make that connection earlier. Right now, we've moved with the help of the board, because we had to get a waiver, to a ninth grade only orientation. And that day has been very, very successful and very, very important to ninth graders to get their feet under them in an atmosphere that's comfortable, safe. So that's the kind of thinking. We also think it's critical that we, again, I'll use the word deliberate, that we deliberately pay attention and teach kids how to do high school. Not every child comes ready, willing, able, with siblings that know the ropes or whatever it is that propels some kids through high school more easily than some other kids. So whatever our design is, it will pay specific attention to how do you do this thing called high school. We think this is absolutely critical and speaks to the information that we got through the survey about how many kids don't have an adult, a consistent adult, that they can call their own, so to speak. And we think that that adult should be with them all 4 years. That once that relationship is made, that relationship needs to stay. And here's a very good example of how you can get to that end result, a consistent end result, but you can get there in a number of ways. Right now, Memorial's doing neighborhoods, and adults are assigned. Smaller Learning Communities has its own way of connecting kids and adults. East just started Pergolder Time this year, and Alan may address that later on in detail. And then La Follette is looking at how can it utilize its homerooms or advisories right now to make certain that that link, that adult-to-kid link, occurs. We feel it's critical that every one of our students have a personalized education plan. And West High School, the guidance counseling staff at West designed this, and we have now been able to work with Wisconsin Career Information System to pull those two things together into one software package. So we're ready to move that on to the other high schools as well.
What are your thoughts on whether students are actually ready to engage meaningfully with their career plans at the high school level? I mean, I know that what we see in higher education is that people might have four or five different career paths or majors before they graduate, and then after they graduate, they might go through four or five more.
Yeah. This is less about choosing a career path and more about broadening your horizons so you start looking. The career education and development piece that we've started at the middle school is very much that. Just plugging into all of the various things. We're very interested in letting students understand that there are paths to get to places, but those places, say it's medicine, for example, there are ways to get to be a nurse or a doctor, but that path also can lead to pharmacy, to this, to this, to this, to this. So we're not contemplating, as the state of Florida has just done, in requiring our high school kids to declare a major. This is more about just opening up possibilities.
And it also means that you're going to be able to have that done consistently every year. With current developmental guidance at four high schools, it's done very differently. And so depending on which school you go to and which grade you're in is going to determine how it's delivered. And this would make it equal across the board and have the same template to work with.
Exactly.
My concern is a lot less with the equality as it is with the disjuncture between that sort of approach and what I experienced at freshman orientation at UW, where an associate dean from engineering started talking about being worried about the kids who come in and say, I want to be an engineer, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to heal the sick and raise the dead, and so forth and so on, because, in fact, a good, healthy self-questioning can actually get the student a lot farther than coming in with their life all mapped out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's important, too, to recognize as we have these conversations with kids, is that not only do college students change their majors a lot, but in our current work world, people change careers way more often than they ever used to. So that's an important component, too.
One quick thing about the WIS careers. I actually did it at WIS.
Uh-huh.
And it's not merely a... it's not necessarily trying to channel you into one kind of career or make you pick a career. I mean, I know one of the functions that I used it for was simply to search what jobs were out there, and they had every student come in and do it, and it was pretty helpful. What I would say is that the WIS careers is a technological program, and for it to be effective, it needs to be utilized in conjunction with the previous point with the staff member, and that personal connection is, it has to be there for the program to be effective. Because students who were not in touch with their guidance counselor, who weren't talking to a person about what they needed and what they wanted and how they could get it, the program did nothing for them. But other than that, the program itself can be an effective tool.
That's a very good point. And it also speaks to Ms. Mathiak's point. If you're not talking it through, then you might feel yourself challenged.
It's also, we live in a world that wants a very linear progression, and yet I know philosophy majors who are Fortune 500 CEOs. I know, right? I mean, the guy who founded Excel Inns was a math major.
Exactly.
One of our premier pianists was a math major. I mean, it's there. When you get into the real world, and I work with about 170,000 alumni of a liberal arts college, I can guarantee you there's almost zero correlation between the major and what people end up doing for their careers. I'm a history major. It's not what I'm doing. So I worry that we give students a broad perspective on education rather than pushing them, and I've said this, to Art and to you individually, that we understand that we're in a world where some of the most important skills we can give our young people are broad educational and critical thinking, because, in fact, that's what employers are looking for.
Exactly. Exactly. And while we're still on the personalized education plan, we feel that it would be very important to add into that conversation, and I think this would also address some of your concerns, is that the family participates in developing that personalized education plan. There's dreams, there's reality, there's all kinds of things that go into supporting young people as they move forward and start identifying what is of interest to them, which doesn't necessarily mean that they will end up there. We also want to do, at the high school level, more topical workshops for parents. How to parent adolescents, what does a driver's license mean, all of those kinds of things that are important for just the informational value, but I think are very critical as well to bring different kinds and different groups of people together around the common issues of parenting high schoolers. And I think those conversations, I mean, that could not only be a good place to gather information, but a great place to build bridges across families. Carol?
Yeah, and it would seem to me that just as you're targeting eighth grade students, targeting parents of incoming ninth graders, because recalling how I felt when my first became a high schooler, of all the types of decisions that I had to make suddenly that I hadn't fully anticipated.
Yes.
And having a way to talk with them, to have them talk with parents of older students so they get some sense of, you know, what would be consistent with the school culture in terms of what's expected of kids, in terms of social events, all sorts of other things.
Yeah. Very true. And then we want to, just one other thing, one other example, is revisiting how do we get parents, how do we talk with parents? How can we conference with parents? Whether that be a more flexible schedule for parent-teacher conferences, more, you know, the parent portal is going to be very helpful. But again, you know, it's missing that human element. So how can we better talk to parents and share information and share strategies?
One thing with the parent conferences, I know that I've a lot of my friends right now are talking to their counselors for the very first time in their high school career, because they're, you know, applying to college or trying to figure out what they're doing after high school, but it's the very first time they're doing it. And you know, I was looking at this and wondering how and, you know, the consistent staff member and stuff like that, but it occurs to me that the parent teacher conferences are just for teachers, and that it might be beneficial to find some way to get parents in touch with the counselors as well, and find out more generally how the student is doing, not just in a class, but in the general school environment.
Yeah. I do know that the counselors are all available during parent-teacher conference, but I also know that that schedule, when you're trying to move teacher to teacher to teacher, makes it very difficult to drop into the guidance office and add that,
I understand that.
To the conversation.
Just a general thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Engagement. One of the things that we all agree on is that we need to organize ourselves in a fashion that makes the world, the high school world, smaller and more manageable. And this is a very important slide. All of them are important, but this one. What a smaller learning community does in the way we are conceptualizing it is it makes relationships, engagement, and communication its focus. The structure of a smaller learning community does not dictate, again, in the way we are conceptualizing it, any curricular offerings or patterns. Kids who are smart and part of a smaller subset in a school can still pursue multiple academics, advanced tracks, whatever the case might be. We're not talking about using this structure to divide up the academic world. It's all about relationships, engagement, and that last one, the critical one, communication. Not only communication with the student, but, again, communication with the parent, the family. And when you organize where you have your administrative staff divided in such a manner and your student support staff, like counselors, psych, social work, divided in a way that supports 500 kids as opposed to trying to support 2,000 students, in a less organized, structured way, you lose out on some of the resources that you have in the building. So that's why we want to organize to facilitate, again, relationships, engagement, and communication. Lucy.
Can
Can I ask a really dumb question?
No,
I know Mr. Harris is going to turn purple when I ask this, but why wouldn't you just stick with the grade level organization? And what's the difference between this and grade level?
Well, he can answer, but the difference in my mind is you break your relationship every time you move across to grade level, and that's why we moved away from it. You just get to know all those fine ninth grade people, and then darn, you're moved on to the next group of people and the next and the next. So this would keep you with the same group.
You used to have a ninth grade principal and a 10th grade principal and so forth and so on. So those people stayed the same and the counselors stayed the same.
Right.
It was the teachers who changed. So
teachers change, but as the child moves from 9th to 10th grade, it's a new principal.
That, not at East it wasn't. Okay. You had the same principal.
They moved
all
with
years.
The group?
Yeah.
Then it's the same.
I think one difference is, as I've looked at it, I think it's very different for counseling. There's a big difference in counseling that transition from 8th grade into 9th grade and getting kids lined up and started. And then trying to get kids out of the end of that junior year through that senior year and into college. Counselors will kill me for saying this, but that's where the really intense work is. And I think I've always believed that we can do a better job of really dealing with, for example, the ninth grade transition. If I, as a counselor, am only dealing with a small number of kids rather than dealing with all the ninth graders at the same time. That's the way I've looked at it from the counseling side. I think you can do a more intense job in the two places that have the most intensity if you have a smaller number of kids that you're dealing with.
But can I just clarify the difference between what we're talking about with East High and we're talking about with these smaller mm-hmm. learning communities?
Yeah.
That when we were talking about and had a grade level structure at East High, it was one person connected with a group of students. That was an assistant principal. That's not a small learning community. That's somebody dealing with the high-flying kids, which we had that system, and then we had guidance counselors alphabetically and soc and psych, sometimes grade level. So the structure we tried to create was to create more adults focused around smaller groups of kids, which was designed by the guidance counselors and the social workers and psychologists to say, let's create purple and gold teams, so when a student starts at East High now, they're a member of a purple team that has their guidance counselor, social worker, and school psychologist who would be paired with that student for all 4 years, which is, in my mind, a closer structure, more intimate than the student, than a principal who would loop out and around and allow. And now we have a principal who then works with the guidance and social and psych staff to work on how to create that support. The next step would be to try and hopefully, if we had a grant to do the staff development, to create homerooms that would be designed under purple and gold so that you have that real teacher connection and you have a homeroom that students are in for all 4 years. And then you have a real intimate environment of about 25 students to one adult connected with guidance and social work. That's the difference between having a system principal who followed them for 4 years as opposed to trying to create the system that creates a narrower environment.
Okay, yeah, I mean, you know, just for Ms. Rain, I mean, my kids had the same guidance, and I'm sure Laurie's kids did too, unless there was a change in staff, they had the same guidance counselor all the way through, so that didn't change from year to year.
But if it's the way most grade-level organizations are, that same guidance counselor had a whole bunch of kids of that age level, and because typically, I don't know how ours are organized here because I haven't done ours here, but typically if you have in a grade level structure, if that guidance counselor follows those kids, you may have two guidance counselors assigned to all the ninth graders. So, yeah, they're following that kid, but in that ninth grade year where it's a real intense struggle to get them into school, you've got those two guidance counselors dealing with all the ninth graders.
No, that's not how it was.
Well, I'm just saying that's typically how it is. I don't know how it is at each one of the schools,
no,
but typically
up,
that's not how it is.
It was divided up alphabetically, so.
I can address that a little bit. Being a certified counselor myself and having been in that role till I came here, I see the biggest difference that you're coordinating as a counselor. I worked with a caseload based on an alphabet 9 through 12. And so I would have to work with all of the issues that presented themselves. We had 1 year, I was at La Follette, we had 1 year where we did only grade level, so for 1 year I just concentrated on 10th graders, and so we tried that system. What we found is that there's a great deal of value in teaming and collaboration, and so with this system, what you do is you concentrate on, if it's still an alphabetic split, which can be done differently at different places, what you're really doing is you're working with a smaller group of staff members, so you'd have, I would be assigned a support staff in psychology, a social worker, an assistant principal, and then teams of teachers. So as we look at ninth graders, I would be similar to a middle school model where I would then work with four teachers, and we would have team meetings together, we would have planning time together, and we would work on thematic issues, and so again, it would be similar in that structure to middle school, whereas right now, most of us didn't have time to meet with our teachers. And so dealing with, you know, your 300, 400 kids and your caseload, you would only time that you would meet with a support staff and maybe a teacher would be if it came up at a building team meeting, and usually it was around an issue. So this would give it some other structure to be more consistent throughout the 4 years.
Joe.
From my experience with the smaller learning community organization at West, the staff engagement portion of the program is very effective, and the consistency with which you engage with staff members and secretaries and counselors works very well. However, the aspect of the smaller learning community goal wherein you are attempting to create a physically or at least seemingly physically smaller school environment for the students is not effective in that what you lose, Ms. Mathiak, from changing from the grade level organization is the inherent community that comes from being in the same grade, in that the majority of people's friends are their same grade. You see, as you walk down the halls, you see people who are in the same grade, and you have a sense of community with them. You do not have a sense of community, at least an inherent sense of community, with approximately 500 assigned students that are random. And I have absolutely no idea who is in my SLC in terms of students, except for the students in my homeroom. And if I had been around during freshman advisory, I would have known the students in my advisory. But other than that, there is no student community. There is no student engagement on that level. So I would point that out, and efforts that can be made to develop, you know, there's fun things you can do to get people to, you know, SLCs versus SLCs, et cetera, so that people sort of develop a sense of their community that spans beyond their grade level.
Right. And the importance of us doing collective work is that we can gain knowledge about what works, what doesn't, how things are structured. I answered your question the way I did, Lucy, because when we went to smaller learning communities at Memorial, the grade level principal stayed with that grade level and the kids moved. And that was just chaotic for kids. And so we took it, you know, to the nth degree. And by assigning counselors, psych, social workers, to that smaller group of kids, and they remained with them for the 4 years. And we also were able to provide some actual physical space that defined the smaller learning community. It was possible for a counselor to walk into a study hall, for example, and every student in that study hall belonged to them. And so you didn't have to send out notes to try and find your counselees. You could zero in on them. So there's just a number of ways, and as we continue to talk about how this might best work, we're going to learn a lot in the conversation.
Pam?
Yes.
I just have one comment. I've been very pleased at West with the whole relationship aspect of the SLCs. With my daughter is a sophomore, and that relationship has been very important. Knowing who her assistant principal is, knowing who her guidance counselor is, being able to go to her guidance counselor when she has had questions, and knowing that these people will be with her for the next 2.5 years seems to be very reassuring to her, because she she needs support in certain areas, and she knows who to go to and feels very comfortable with that, as do I wearing my parent hat, because I know who to talk to, I know who to ask questions for of. And, you know, the group has come together, the SLC support team or the building team, whatever the appropriate name is at West, and, you know, has been very supportive in, you know, tracking different things with relationship to my daughter, offering certain supports and following up on many things. And I think it's great, because for the next, you know, 2.5 years, I will be, and she will be, more importantly, working with the same people. And she truly feels very, very comfortable with the, you know, the Rick Rosens and Beth Thompsons and John Rummels at West, yeah, and knows exactly where to go if she has a question, concern, or issue. And so I find that to be very positive and reassuring.
Good. Thank you for saying that. And as you were talking, it reminded me that not only, as in many things like this, it's not only the student that benefits from the closer communication and longer-term relationship, but the staff as well. Because I think for a lot of staff members, we always say this, you're not necessarily sure that you're making an impact until those kids are long gone. But if you can see the growth incrementally over the 4 years, if you have some level of responsibility for that growth, that personal and social growth, it's very, very rewarding for staff to have that relationship as well. Lucy.
I just wanted to say, I think part of my confusion is it may be that what we experienced at East is a lot like the model that's being presented here, mm-hmm, in terms of having that, yeah, you know, that grade level person that was ours. Uh-huh. You know, we had Mr. Ragnes and we had Mr. Kraus. You know, we had Mr. Nash, because mm-hmm, we were in the mm-hmm STs, you know, so it was, you know, one of those things where some of the things you describe
were there,
were already there.
Yeah.
And so that's where I'm, I was trying,
sure,
to sort out.
Sure.
The only point of clarification is that it was a person, not a team.
Right.
Yep.
It was an assistant,
right,
principal that was associated with a class, not a team of staff members in guidance, social work, psych, and teachers connected to the kid.
Right.
And
that's
just a really important difference.
And might I add, the goddess known as the grade level secretary, who,
yes,
as my kids discovered, I knew what had happened before they got home.
Yes.
I called early, called often, and I got everything I needed.
Yeah. Yes, we all who have had kids at high school have a big debt for the grade level secretaries.
No question.
Say.
No. Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I was wondering if I could just ask,
yes,
Bruce really quickly. My kids are both in eighth grade, so I'm listening raptly to this conversation. And they're going to be at Memorial, and I've been in the building and seen the physical space for each of the neighborhoods, and then you also have the backyards, and I don't know how often they meet. I wonder if that helps to fill that social part of maybe not knowing the kids in your neighborhood. You know, I've seen the backyards meeting. They've got donuts on Thursdays or something, and it seems like they're...
We've actually expanded it. We've actually expanded...
All right, that was last year.
Wellness. Right. We've actually expanded our backyards this year, Beth, to twice a week on Wednesdays and Thursdays, because we really felt it important because of that relationship and engagement piece. And we've actually, and I was going to talk about it a little bit here in a minute, but we've actually also gone to 2 staff members in each one of our backyards, because we felt 1 staff member with about 25 is on the edge of really trying to build that relationship. But what we've done is been able to go to 80 backyards as opposed to 100, and we've got 2 staff members in each one of our backyards. So now we've reduced down to about 1 per 12 and a half students, so that one teacher might be working with social types of activities and building community and community service, and one might be eventually working on the career counseling piece that we were talking about earlier. So we've kind of looking at progressing on to what might happen in the near future. But again, it's randomly. The students are randomly assigned, and those backyards do kind of support the engagement piece and the building of relationships, not only with kids 9 through 12, but also with another staff member in the building, which is another adult that they get to know.
Sugar-free donuts, is that the way you
Pardon?
Do it? Is
sugar-free,
it is sugar-free donuts?
Sugar-free.
Okay.
Absolutely. Carrots and radishes.
Right. Shaped like donuts. Okay. Are we ready to move on? Thank you for all of that conversation. It's exactly the kind of thing we were hoping for. We feel strongly that one of the elements has to speak to safe, secure, and respectful classrooms. And we know we can't get there without talking about it, without teaching about it, without helping students understand what is safe and respectful behavior, and not only to adults, but to each other. And how does that look? And how would they design a plan or a code of conduct or what have you for their building, their classroom, the way they want to be treated and the way that hopefully they extend that to how they want to treat others. We certainly want to look at restorative practices. A youth court is a possibility. It's being piloted. And the time bank that is very much a part of the east side, northeast side. We've had the founders of the time bank come and talk with our principals. It's an exciting concept and really brings the notion of service into a different, it's a different way to look at how kids could really reach out into the community and bring the community into the school. So we want to pursue the time bank notion. We also want to make certain that there are enhanced opportunities to accelerate or remediate when needed. And this speaks, again, to the broad spectrum of students that we want to serve. And we don't want to shortchange anyone in that process. And these are just some, again, some examples. We've talked about the possibility of doing a literacy or a reading screener for all incoming ninth graders so we know where further assistance, such as Read 80 or some other kind of specific reading intervention can be done. We just had a presentation. DPI is in the process of changing a lot of its rules and regulations around talented and gifted. We want to do work around the in-step process identification. If it didn't occur in the elementary or middle school year, high school is certainly not too late, and how might we do a better job of working with students who really need to advance or accelerate. Advanced placement honors, by whatever, you know, whatever names, we're certainly open to looking at International Baccalaureate, any number of things. We're not settled at all in this arena. But the important piece is everybody's got talents, everybody's got skills, everybody's got specific needs, and we want to program for all of that. And we want to continue to explore dual credit opportunities like Project Lead the Way, a number of our the programs that we do jointly with MATC that bring, and obviously post-secondary options, that bring us outside credit into the system, allowing kids to get some opportunities that we might not be able to provide on our own. Lucy.
I'd like to make a couple of observations. One is that since I've been on the board, probably the part of my board activity that I dislike the most is expulsions. And what really strikes me when I look at the students who are coming before us for expulsion is the number of students who are significantly below grade level academically and are doing very, very well with off-campus instruction. I would, as a parent of a student who was behind academically, I would guess because it's less humiliating to get that one-on-one. And so I would hope that as part of the redesign, we would be thinking about not just the literacy screening in ninth grade, but the literacy and math screening before kids leave eighth grade.
Yeah.
Because I've seen what can happen in my own family when a student begins to succeed.
Yeah.
And when a student doesn't feel like a dummy, and when a student feels like they can catch up and they're getting what they need.
Yes.
To be part of the school. And so I, and just looking at the correlations between truancy and poor academic skills, I think there's a lot we could work with, and I'm sure that Sally has seen it at Shabazz, and we've seen it with all, some of our alternative programs. I've also seen a surprising number of students who are described by off-campus instruction as being very bright and capable of above grade level work. And so I encourage us to also think about how we're identifying students and whether we have enough opportunities, because I know that in many cases there are advanced classes, but there are X number of slots and no more. And you know, this is something Mr. Harris has heard me carry on about at length many times, but I do believe that if we have enough students for two sections, why not teach two sections? If we have students, you know, again, one of the experiences I saw with a friend of the family was a younger brother who went from eighth grade and advanced algebra into high school and was placed in a remedial math class, and big surprise, the kid starts cutting class and doesn't do well. I think that if we could focus some energy on really reconceptualizing how we work with our counselors and our students and our placements so that we're getting the students what they need to succeed from before the moment they walk into that first day of ninth grade, I think we're going to see a whole bunch of different things in our school, but it starts with giving them what they need, because there are plenty of people who have lots of ways for them to spend their time that are really not very productive or socially acceptable.
Yes, yes, thank you. Carol?
Actually, this goes back to a little ways, but I've long felt that one of the real keys here is that at the point at which kids enter high school, connecting them with extracurricular and co-curricular activities that are ways to help them find different groups to interact with, but also give them a strong connection to the system. And I don't think, certainly when my kids were high school, were going into high school, that we did a very good job of taking them and helping them find the things. And some of them knew somebody ahead of them or something and so could ask or were willing to ask, but a couple of my kids weren't willing to ask and kind of floated. And I think we are doing a better job these days, but I still think that you know, if we could connect every kid up to some kind of an activity from early on, that would help, I think, build that connection.
Absolutely. Okay.
I just wanted to say one more thing, and I made some notes about things I'd hope we talk about, and maybe we'll get to this, but it seems to me that it's not just the curricular pieces and it's not just the infrastructure pieces. But I also encourage our redesign team to really look at our guidance and counseling practices. I have shared horror stories, sometimes inadvertently, about some of the things that young people I know were told. And so there's the part where we're not seeing what they have and what they bring and what they need, but there also have been parts where we haven't seen what they aspire to. And, you know, Sally and I have had the pleasure of knowing one of these young people in common because she started at East and went to Shabazz and is now soaring. And I can hardly wait to see what she becomes one day, but she is the one who was told, you are not college material. And I know she wasn't the only one. I would like us to see and help students be realistic, but not discourage them, but help them to understand what it takes and how to get there and what resources are there, not just in our schools, but in the world beyond our schools, to give them a future. Because, again, that ability to envision a future, to me, is pivotal in what our schools will become. If our students don't believe they have a future, we will reap what we sow.
Yes, exactly. And certainly, I think I don't know if I've said it out loud before the board, but I've certainly said it forever. And it's my wish and hope and driving force that kind of story loses its, it no longer has a life, that we don't hear that any longer. And one of the things that that we, as we talk about clustering groups of adults around kids, so there are more voices, and so that the guidance function can be expanded into that's what developmental guidance is all about, actually, is moving that caring and that planning and that support across a larger group of people. So we don't hear those stories any longer. Beth.
Yeah, I wanted to also talk for just a minute. I'm assuming that the design team will be talking about the special education, the way the special education services are administered. And
yes.
I noticed two slides down is collaborative co-teaching teams, and that's something that I think that's the way that we need to go. The middle schools are trying to go that direction. I hope that I will see that in the new high school design. You know, more opportunities for kids with special needs, with kids with disability in academics and in fine arts, just more opportunities to be in regular classes with the other kids. And, you know, Edgewood now has a program for kids with developmental disabilities, a college program. And so we're going to be seeing more and more kids with disabilities going to college. And we need to prepare them. My son tells me he's going to college. And that's what he's going to do. But he has to have help through high school to achieve that goal.
Right.
So I don't remember. There may be something specific about special education in the PowerPoint, but
yeah,
I don't remember seeing.
We're coming to it.
Okay.
But, yeah. We'll wait till we get there. Oh, we're about to be shut off. Okay.
Oops, sorry. That one.
Which is great. I don't mind. Oh, delay. Yeah, we need to do delay.
Actually,
right?
While we're solving that, I will echo that and say that I had written a note about a class that I witnessed, again, at East. It was math skills, which was a two-hour class, but really helped with the fundamentals of algebra and study skills.
Yep.
So it was...
That's coming, too.
And Ms. Paulson.
All right, now we're into the domain of learning. Every student will have a number of options available to meet their specific learning goals and needs. And these are some of the kinds of things we're talking about. That strong pathway, so everybody is ready for whatever it's going to be. And to piggyback on Lucy's comments, not only ready, but have been given the kind of emotional support to tell them that their goals are attainable. We want to provide a very coherent sequence of English, math, and science courses that will provide students with the knowledge and skills to succeed in post-secondary education and careers. That is not to say that other academic areas aren't critical, but we did focus on these at this point in time. And then providing comprehensive guidance and academic counseling to all students and families, and to do that in a way where it doesn't kick in the junior year, but this is an ongoing, this is where the personal learning plan is very, very important. We do want to make certain that kids, particularly kids who are very, very ready, have an opportunity to access college coursework. We really would like to see the science internship program, that notion, try to expand that kind of program where students are working intensively with a professor for a period of time, sometimes with a very specific project and an end result for that student that would not necessarily have to remain in the field of science. We'd like to be able to expand that. We also believe that our apprenticeship programs are something that are underutilized, sometimes hard to get into. We'd like to build a much, much stronger relationship with the community people who do provide apprenticeships and try to expand that. And then we have a number of our students very engaged in the process of receiving entry-level certifications in nursing, childcare, banking, finance, in the building trades, and we would like to expand those avenues for kids as well. Now we get to what Beth was talking about. We really think that, I've always thought, that the best that special education teachers have to offer is the best that they can offer to regular ed as well, in terms of study skills, how you can reorganize and conceptualize things in a different manner and learn the material, but learn in a different way. And so the notion of being able to team teach, to put regular ed and special ed together, last year we sent teams of high school regular ed and special ed teachers and principals to a leadership institute on special education that talked about how this might best be done. And our high schools are very much in this conversation about increasing inclusion opportunities, supporting appropriately, and making certain that everybody gets a shot at a curriculum that's rigorous and high quality. So we are addressing that and feeling like we now have some of the background information that we received last year. Jack Jorgensen was wonderful in supporting the high schools in that work, and we are following up with those teams this year to expand it. And this year the middle schools are being trained in the same manner. And then, we want to just keep this sharing going because it shows, I believe, phenomenal potential. We want to have those teams meeting. We want to have those teams thinking and talking, going back into their buildings, floating ideas, gathering responses as we refine. So when we're ready to move this design forward, that we are not moving it into an environment that A, knows nothing about it, which has happened sometimes with innovations, B, that are ready and invested, and we have done the professional development with all staff to raise their capacity to do something different. And another thing we're going to reinstitute, Lisa Wachtel is going to help us with that, is begin to bring the department chairs back together. They used to meet together. They used to talk about curriculum. They used to talk about articulation with the middle school. And we feel that those two things are critical to giving a firmer foundation, a firmer start for our kids. So we're going to reinstitute those conversations.
Just a political comment. That was a revenue cap induced budget cut a long time ago.
And somehow we're going to get around that.
So noted.
Okay, next. And then we know, and this is very important, and I use the word in the first bullet specifically. We need to manipulate the school year schedule to provide time for professional development. Right now we have those scattered half days. We have the one full day. But at the high school level, by the time the day is done, the bell rings and the faculty assembles for the monthly faculty meeting, there's about 15 minutes left to have actual in-depth conversation. So we need to figure out a way that we can spend a little more time together talking over issues, learning about things. And one of the things that's very, very difficult to do, but we want to continue to talk about it, is how to schedule the high school so that there is common planning time for content teams so they can talk, share materials, and do, the kind of building of capacity that's so critical to improve instructional practice. And right now we just do not have the time. Carol?
Yeah, I think that is the hardest thing, as having started out life as a teacher, is the fact that you rarely get enough time to talk to your colleagues about anything. Because you're always, even at lunch, you've got to grab lunch and get back. And you're involved with students before and after, and the ability to sit down and just talk about, well, what are you doing and how are you dealing with this, is so rare. And if we can manage to deal with that, I think we'd be great.
Great. Thank you. Instructional practice, and this goes along that line, all the kinds of conversations we could have and should have if we can carve out that time. We really need to expand, and we are. Teaching and Learning is doing some wonderful things in terms of providing online learning, professional development opportunities. We just all love Bainbridge Learning, so we threw that up there as an example. Classroom action research, this district has a history of that. There's been some marvelous things that have come to light, and then practices that have been expanded across the district because of the research and the results of that research. So we would like to continue that. And again, that notion of sharing best practice with your colleagues is something that we just really feel strongly about. We also feel that as we look at instructional practice, that we want to keep in mind that the end goal, whatever the course might be, is proficiency, and that we want to help our instructors understand that there are multiple ways to get students to that proficient level. And that's where, again, the notion of the heart of the reform work will be the classroom, so that students can get to where they need to go, whether it be a learning modality that works better for them, whether it be the notion of test-retest with no punishment until you get the concept and then you move on. There are a number of conversations, hard conversations, I might add, but conversations that we need to have about how can we do what in truth we are about, and that is getting a kid to the point where they know the material, they feel confident in their ability to transfer that knowledge to another setting, to use that information. So those conversations are ahead. And then we know that it would be an interesting exercise it's called back mapping. It's saying at the end of it all, when that diploma is handed out and we say that diploma means that you are competent in the following areas, how do we get to that moment as we backtrack it through the 4 years, through the various disciplines? What does it look like specifically? And then how do we flesh it out in a different way, or how do we simply celebrate the fact that we're doing a very good job of getting kids to that point? But we feel that's an exercise that would be an important one to do as we examine practice. There are also a number of things that are on our horizon will be ongoing. The movement to a standards-based report card as it moves from the elementary to the middle and then eventually to the high school. With that, of course, obviously comes a standards-based curriculum. And we are very interested in looking at some common assessments that go across the district in academic areas so that we might, again, examine our practice, examine our curriculum together, and a common assessment would help us do that. Lucy.
Have you given any thought to looking at our district's results from placement tests for example, it would be possible to see how our students do when they take the UW system placement tests, which might be some useful information to see how we're doing in our curriculum. Likewise, I think the same data could or should be available from the technical system. Uh-huh. But it seems to me that, you know, there are a lot of things we don't know, but certainly how our students place when they attempt to go on would be potentially helpful.
That's a great idea. We knew that we could get like first quarter grades or what have you, but a placement exam
would be.
I can
give you the name of the person who can.
Thank you.
Help you.
That would be great. And then always we are keeping at the forefront of our discussions the notion that we need to continue to be culturally relevant. In both what we offer and also in the way we offer it. Another thing we'd like to take a look at is the notion of project-based learning. And again, this is just an example. But where students apply knowledge in addition to gaining knowledge, and for example, putting math, science, and social studies students together around a integrated curricular area, interest area, such as, made this one up, quite frankly, but growth patterns in Madison, using statistics, talking about what our sustainable natural resources are in terms of further development, and then the socioeconomic neighborhood patterns that Madison is experiencing and has experienced over its historical development. So the opportunity for kids not only to get a chance to kind of go out into their own community and learn more about their own community, but also that instantaneous chance to apply what they've learned. So we'd just like to explore that.
They could become our new long-range planning committee.
They could. And this speaks to what someone brought up earlier, that whole notion of how we continue to keep a layer of support under kids as we try and move them forward and help them to attain their full potential. People have experimented, and some people are doing this, some we're just talking about, ninth grade only study halls. Kind of, again, taking away perhaps that level of embarrassment or whatever the case might be. But it's not just that ninth graders are clustered together in a study hall. It's the kind of support that's clustered in that study hall with those ninth graders. And if you can get those study halls staffed by academic teachers that can support homework, that can answer questions, that can also be done, as West is doing, with older students supporting kids as well, and that's our final bullet there. We also think that there is some value in what we are calling reinforcement blocks that are contiguous to an academic offering. So you have the class, and then you go immediately into another time block that reinforces the work, re-embeds it, so to speak, and really helps the student move forward. And then that whole old notion of a homework hotline or something. A number of kids described to us that they are not part of a study group, don't have friends to rely upon. So when they get stuck in the middle of the night, who do they call? Who do they talk to? And it was a notion floated by CESA, I think it was CESA 11, a number of years ago, very popular, and it too fell victim to budget cuts. But I think that notion of how you help kids as they're working, if we could figure it out, would be a good thing. And technology may be the answer to that. If we can get enough technology in the hands of everybody, kids could be texting each other all night long about, hopefully, homework. And we struggled with how to describe this, and I finally settled on this, but we're certainly open to discussion. There is no question that kids who take the ACT do better, nationwide at least, if they have what AC describes as the core curriculum. And kids who don't have that core curriculum, math, science, etc., don't do as well. Now, Madison kids do pretty well, whether they've cored or not cored, as the case might be. But we want to make certain that everybody starts out with a pretty firm foundation in the academics. So, because we know that when you have that foundation, you can move on into more advanced classes. You feel confident, and you do well when you get there. So we will continue to define what we mean by core curriculum and how we're envisioning that. Repeating again, but repeating because it's so important to us, is the notion that we want our curriculum to move kids to a point where they can make the next step, make the next choice, and get any barriers out of the way, whether it be poor advice, whether it be not moving kids along quickly enough, all of those various things that we sometimes have done in the past, we want to get those barriers out of the way.
One thing quickly about the the ACT.
Joe.
There's a lot on this PowerPoint about encouraging students to move on to post-secondary options, particularly college, right? And the ACT is primarily a college entrance exam.
Right.
And I agree that the district should make any effort necessary to remove barriers to additional study and stuff like that. But I would caution the district against focusing college as a primary goal. College is a means to an end. It's a means mm-hmm. towards student success. And if you look around the country, oftentimes there will be schools that will, you know, load up their curriculum with honors and AP courses, and they will, you know, teach essentially so that students can do well on the ACT, and they will, in doing so, sacrifice essentially the education of their students, and they'll sacrifice the end goal of student success. And so I certainly support district, you know, looking at that, but I would just throw that in there. In terms of keeping the sort of total what you do after high school option in perspective.
Balance. And if we've overloaded, thank you for pointing that out, because that's certainly not our intention. Our intention is preparation that allows you this. I think that for some students, who don't take the ACT, for example, that is less about maybe where they've made up their mind and more about that's just not something that they're aware of, that they've been talked to. One of the things we've flirted with and was certainly part of the Smaller Learning Communities grant was the opportunity for every student to take the ACT plan so they could get a sense of, oh, that's what this is, and a sense of, again, their own ability, which hopefully will, you know, spur them on to think and make some wise choices. But, yeah, that's a very good point. Lucy?
You know, I think one of the things that bears remembering in all of this is the community that we serve. For families that are connected to higher education, a lot of this is a given. For some of our students who are very much raising themselves, this is going to be their only chance to be exposed and encouraged and given the resources that are part of daily life in academic families. And it's not about ability, it's about background and resources and culture. And again, you know, I've had the wonderful experience of seeing young people get that college is in their future and is for them. And there's something very important about what you're saying here. It doesn't preclude other things. And you know, I think one of the things that could be a resource for our high schools in ways that we're not using them right now are the community members who have made distinct career choices. Carol and I have a neighbor who's a lawyer who does very high-end woodworking. You know, there are reasons why people choose what they choose, but at this point, we're talking about young people and letting them know that they have options, that the ACT is not some big scary thing that only those other kids can try. Right. That, in fact, it's not uncommon to take a trial run at it. And if you don't do terribly well, it's not the end of the world. Again, if you're in that academic culture, that's a given. But for a lot of our students, that's completely foreign territory and territory that our staff and our schools could make familiar if we choose.
Wonderful. Thank you for saying that for me. We want to get kids to the point where they make the choice that we have not made the choice for them. Carol?
And increasingly, the core academic skills that the ACT envisages are needed regardless of whether you're going on to college or some technical training or into careers. And it's not that, I mean, as I look or hear about what you need to do to become a carpenter these days, it involves some pretty high-level math skills and writing. And I think that's increasingly true in the broad spectrum. So it's really an issue of, as you said, making sure that our kids have all of the things that they need when they get out of high school so that they're not constrained, that they can go in any direction they want to.
Okay, our next steps. We've reworked the timeline to be a little more respectful of the complexity of the work that we're undertaking, and also to allow for input from the new superintendent. We do, however, want to go out into the community now with the work we have done to date, to start gathering information, to start feeding back information from that survey, for example. And then we also would love, and Carol, this is your idea, that came up in the communications committee, go out and use student scenarios in order to obtain input across the city. The kinds of kids that we all know, that we all deal with, illustrate for particularly people who have not had kids in a high school, the various dimensions we have to respond to and solicit that information. We thought that was just a terrific idea because it kind of took out the equation the hardest part of high school redesign, which is I went to high school and therefore I know about high school. But if we can talk about the not only the complex world that the kids are going to go into, but just the kinds of things you described, the kids who don't have the background or the kids who have to work as part of their family support, and the kids who have been, identified early on as being incredibly gifted, and put that all together and talk about how our design elements might be utilized to best construct a school that will respond. So, Carol, if you let us, we'd like to do that.
I'll be delighted.
Thank you. And then we're hearing that February is the next round for applications. By the time all was said and done, we were 2 points away from receiving the application, and we'd like to we're going to reapply.
But just one comment: the window has now been October, November, December, January, and now we're in February. So
pretty much a Fed thing.
Sometime probably after they approve the education appropriation, they'll bring this out.
Exactly. And then next, we'll continue to talk, to draft, to think. And then next fall, with the input of the new superintendent, have a draft of an initial design, bring that draft to you. It'll be, we've given you some foundational thinking tonight. But that, of course, will morph as we get additional community input and staff input and student input. And then, again, next fall, continue to then take a draft out, get more feedback, refine and rework the design. That final draft coming to you for action implementation. And then whole notion of increasing building and professional capacity through professional development. Part of the draft will be a professional development plan, and we'd like to get it underway in January of 2009 to get people ready for an initial implementation of the design in 2009-2010. Again, it speaks very much to the complexity, which was evident in our conversation tonight. All the dimensions, all the things that we very much want to keep in mind as we put this thing together. Now, this evening, I asked the five high school principals to share a little something with you. We're having all of these conversations, obviously, but there are also things going on as current practice in our schools is being refined. So we'll do the four high schools and then wrap it up with Shabazz. Again, Shabazz is our bellwether in terms of the kinds of things that they are doing and the kinds of things that we very seriously want to look at taking to scale in a larger setting. So
I have a very quick question about the timeline.
Yeah.
As the superintendent mentioned before, and you guys talked about change is often unpopular. It's also almost uniformly expensive. And I know next spring, we will be facing, barring any changes in the state you know, funding system will be facing double the budget deficit, or no?
A year from.
No, no, I'm sorry. I meant next spring.
The spring of 2009.
Right when we're sort of starting to implement this. Right, we'll be have to face the sort of the gap that was precluded this year because of the money. Has there been any discussion as to how exactly we're going to finance major and significant and important changes in light of that, you know, the budget cuts that are going to be?
I can address that. Yeah. I mean, first of all, it's very premature to look at how much it's going to cost, since we don't know what it is. So that'd be the first step.
Under the assumption it's going to cost some amount of money.
Not always. Certainly that could be true. But in many cases, you can reallocate current funds, and we've done that many, many times in the district as we've moved forward, certainly over the 14 years I've been here. If you have to reallocate, you weigh your priorities in terms of what we're currently doing, what we believe is best to do, and you reallocate your resources, and you don't do everything you're doing now. That's one thing. And, of course, the same options are available for this that are always available, which is you cut other services or you go to referendum and make your case to the public that this will make our high schools better and make it better for our community, and you sell it. But in many cases, you can reallocate. You just have to reprioritize what's important.
One of the things that struck me was not just in terms of the actual process of implementing it, but the process of developing the program. If you develop a significant redesign of the high school system with budget constraints in mind, that might look very different from a design that you do with just sort of, you know, we'd like to do this and we feel this is the best thing to do. So I mean, it's. I guess I'm wondering how the process itself is going to address the financial concerns that will probably...
I think you always start with the ideal.
Exactly.
And then you work your way back from there. Yeah.
Okay. I guess that's where I was.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but as I look at what you've presented and the proposal that was submitted the first time, this is less about implementing brand new programs on top of what already exists. It's much more about reorganizing what you do and how you do it.
That's right.
So you're talking about the same FTE lines approximately, and you're talking about maybe some curricular changes, but it's not, it's really a restructuring rather than a completely new initiative that you're adding on to a budget.
Yeah.
In most cases. Yeah. If I'm wrong, you know, let me know.
No, that's totally true. Okay. East?
All right. Talk a little bit about the process that we've gone through at East and where we currently are. Really, we think about it has on there the development of school-based innovation teams that, you know, was a consideration across the district as a result of some discussion this summer. At East High School, our innovation team really started in the fall of 2005. We had about 25 teachers come together to talk about what are central areas that they saw as a staff were important to investigate and explore and see where we can improve. What came out of that was a literacy commission to actually wrote for a grant and looked at working on literacy across the curriculum and setting some goals around that. Looking at student intervention, behavior intervention, looking at academic intervention, and then eventually in the fall of last year, really looking at our advanced programming and how we engage more students in that. And that really has become our innovation team, which has the idea being that they gather monthly or sometimes every other month, depending on what reports they have back, but really to develop subcommittees to go out and do the exploration and the work. One of the results of that is our literacy commission that developed literacy goals that were very clear and defined, as well as some of our advanced courses work. And we hired and have in place a 50% literacy coordinator and 50% talented and gifted coordinator, which has really helped us begin to move forward on literacy goals, as well as really looking at how do students access our TAG and advanced placement courses. One of the outcomes of that is the implementation this year of a program called AVID, which stands for Advancement Via Individual Determination. It's a program that has kind of spread across the country. Our teachers had the chance to visit a school in Evanston that had implemented the program about 6 years ago. Students who had completed the program. It's a program designed for students who would be first-generation college students. Predominantly students of low socioeconomic families, minority students. Schools that they visited, the students who had been in the program for 4 years, 100% of them went on to four-year colleges. 95% graduated college in 4 years. So it's a program with a tremendous amount of success. We sent 8 staff to training over the summer and started our first cohort of 27 students in AVID. At the first progress report, the students who were in AVID, about half of them showed a full grade point average increase from the previous semester. It really is about, as Ms. Mathiak was talking about earlier, the recognizing that the concept of what it takes to focus, to study, to gather that information, doing college visits, preparing for the ACTs and those kinds of things, where they may be a part of the culture of my family, for many of our students, it's completely foreign and not a concept. The best example that I have is talking to the class. As part of AVID, they have to maintain and keep a binder that they have to take Cornell notes and keep their notes in the binder and copy them over. They have to keep a schedule and know exactly where they are, and that's a part of their grade. And a student in the class said to me, "Mr. Harris, you want us to keep a B average, which I've never had before, and you also want me to spend all this time doing this binder. It just doesn't make any sense. If you want me to do the homework for my classes, why I got to keep this binder?" And the point being there that the teacher was able to spend to really capitalize on with the students was the binder is the grade. That there was a misconcept that was extra work in somehow and took away from moving towards the grade. It's that type of work. The students have that elective for 4 years with the same teacher. The idea being by the time they're juniors and seniors, they're taking advanced placement and TAG courses and on that on their way. The other piece that we certainly have been working on out of our, and really a lot of credit to our guidance and support service staff, who last year really recognized for themselves that they could do a better job of really coordinating their efforts around students. And it was that group that designed and proposed to our students and then proposed to the parents last year a redesign of their services to create purple and gold teams and focus on really a teamed approach to meeting all student needs. They meet weekly in their purple team to really look at students that may be coming up with needs. In addition, we have a Tuesday-Thursday schedule with an extended 25 minutes and second hour. Tomorrow, Pergolder time is for ninth graders, so all the ninth graders will go for 20 minutes and meet with their guidance counselor. And they have a specific topic that they hit, and they range those throughout the year. The other piece that we certainly have begun work on and are proud of is the last 2 years we have worked hard at our special ed services and our students with special needs. We have done a great deal of work to increase the number of collaborative classes that we offer, the team teaching that is going on. One of the real benefits of the Infinite Campus that was entered into last year, each of our guidance counselors was able really to meet one-on-one with their students as the students entered their courses. And this year we'll really be able to work with special ed to really, as IEPs and others identified team-taught classrooms and those other types of things that will help students succeed, we can load those and preload those first so we know exactly how many team-taught classes we need going in to build the schedule. So it makes a significant difference in being able to connect with students. On top of that, working with and the special ed department at the district has been incredibly supportive. We have 22 teachers, both regular ed and special ed, currently working with a professor from the university on really teamed classrooms and those integrated approaches that help all students succeed well. And those are, you know, just some highlights of the things that we've begun and started to do. It started with those innovation teams that were in fall of 2005, and in the spring of 2006, the community came together around Vision 2012 to really set some goals around having high expectations for academic achievement and behavior, communicating well with our community, and then facility improvement plans to one day not have bowling chairs in our theater, which is an admirable goal, I think. So, you know, it's a broad range of goals that the community has laid out and the teachers have begun working on. The final piece is in the fall of this year, we also, as a result of Vision 2012 and work in each department, were able to start a writing lab, seeing that as a real significant area for students to be able to focus and work on their writing skills. Direct goal in Vision 2012 is something the English department has engaged in. Our next steps is working with our department chairs and others that compose our leadership team. And that staff development piece is a huge component. Before we can confidently move into a real homeroom structure designed under purple and gold, we need to do some staff development with our staff around what that looks like, how they support students so they can be there around them and do that really well. And the other key component is a parent said to me very well last year, she said, "Mr. Harris, you need to understand this. The central act in this drama is the teacher-student relationship in the classroom. And we've got to work on how we support that and build that, honor where our teachers are going, and develop that support for students."
La Follette High School, and to begin with, we don't want our freshmen to just merely make it. We really want to build a solid foundation, understanding that our students come from any of the 11 middle schools in the district, from out of state, from other districts, with disabilities, without disabilities, having had success or not having had success, obviously diverse in terms of our racial makeup. And we really just want to embrace all of our freshmen and really provide for them a consistent basis by which they can develop a foundation that's aimed at future success for them. So here's the great thing. We've got a great first day orientation for just freshmen. Okay, it's a fantastic day. It's a great way to start and begin, but that's one day out of 180. So the real challenge becomes, for 179 days, how are we going to continue to orient our freshmen and give them the extra supports that they need in order to be successful to, again, develop that foundation that is really essential for student success. So I'll share with you just a few things that are underway that we've been working on. One of the things that we did this year is assigned a dean of students to work primarily with freshman students. And let me just give you a few of the roles that our freshman dean of students helps the assistant principal and the student services team achieve with our freshman students. Certainly some discipline, meeting with families, peer mediations and conflicts, an extra adult to be visible in many environments, and quite honestly, to teach freshman students what the La Follette Way is and what it means to be a student at La Follette High School and how to build some pride in school and in the community, again, so they can be successful. Another thing that the Dean of Students does is helps with readmits, readmission meetings from suspensions, from truancy, and also with transfers, new students coming in. Who is the first person that you want a new student to get to know and to meet? And our Dean of Students can really provide that consistent, friendly, and warm introduction to be there on a daily, day-to-day basis with our new students. So those are some things that have really helped this year with our freshmen, just having that extra body, that extra person who can really meet some of the challenges of a first-year high school student. Some of the other things with our ninth grade focus is we really tried to keep classes at a smaller enrollment for freshman students, but again, that's only based on a snapshot in time. Of course, as we get new students, that's one that's a little difficult for us to control when obviously we don't have deeper and deeper pockets. We have some restart initiatives where if students are unsuccessful the first 9 weeks at La Follette, again, that's a semester worth of curriculum. So to right away start them off anew in an environment where they can be with a teacher that can really address some of the needs and the targeted interventions that they need to be successful in those areas, and also gain credit and continue to move with their peers. Some of the other items that are listed there are support programs that are, again, for our freshmen. Our PASS program is our program that is promoting student success and achievement. And really it serves as a mentoring and a tutoring program where our older students help tutor our younger students. So mainly our juniors and seniors and our successful sophomores, if they have a study hall or before school or after school, can sign up and they can tutor our younger students. We've devoted a classroom to that. We also allow for our older tutors to go into classrooms to work in concert with teachers in small groups and really just, again, be another body, another person to help meet some of our academic goals. Within that, and something we don't focus as much on because right now it's tutoring, but also that mentoring thing, having an older role model student, again, show students how to be successful. Sometimes, you know, as adults, we can always do it, and teachers and principals and support staff, but students and students provides a really good model as well. Our tutor coordinator running our PASS program is a 1.0 teacher who coordinates not only our PASS program and our tutoring, but also our partners from the community. MATC, Edgewood, and the UW provide many opportunities for us to really use some of the pre-student teachers, some of the student teachers, and some of the just individuals that volunteer their time to come in and work with our students and our staff. One of the things that we reinvented this year is a writing center. The English department at Edgewood College was nice enough to collaborate with us and send English majors over to LaFalle to work with students on their various writing projects. And again, we really feel that that is a much-needed skill and something we'll continue to work on. So we have many of these programs in place. Now we need a consistent, a system, and a structure. And we're really hoping that the next step of this can be to develop an advisory. RSVP that you see up there is really a reformed way of student council, and RSVP stands for Raising Student Voice and Participation. Those advisories this year have been led by a group of around 100 students that have been trained by a staff member, and what they do is they go out and lead and co-facilitate with small groups, much like a homeroom advisor would, and bring back data that's looking at making decisions in the school that are changing things that affect school culture. And we're at the stage right now where we've held two homerooms, and we have a laundry list of different things that students really want to focus on. The next step will be for them to then formulate some action steps and to really allow the students to have that ability to change the culture at school in a positive way and in a way that they have decided and determined needs to be tweaked or adjusted or certainly addressed. But my goals for an advisory, and at LaFalle, what we would like to do is have a consistent daily advisory that would really take a look at study skills. It would also have a developmental guidance aspect to it, okay, in teaching primarily our younger students, but I think there's a role for all students in that with how to make good decisions, how to be respectful in the classroom, in the hallways, in the lunch line, in all environments, and in the community as well. And then I think a goal that we really need to focus on as a school is just reading. And why do we read? What do we read? When do we read? And what do we do with the information that we read? And really try to address literacy through everything that we do and have that become part of everyday life of every student at LaFalle. So again, it's really exciting to see so many of the pieces come together, but now to look to develop a consistent system by which we can do this, I think we'll just enhance what we've begun. And again, like to thank the other principals that are up here. As a first-year high school principal, I've really appreciated their teamwork and their ideas and just their willingness to share. Like Dr. Nash said, it's really been a good team approach to this. Thank you.
Memorial High School would like to focus our conversations here this evening on a couple different areas, one on learning, one on relationships, and one on some after-school programming. We were fortunate at Memorial to have a core program, a ninth grade core program, which really is set up for eighth to ninth grade transition. What we've been able to do is core together social studies, science, and English, and provide three teachers that those students, and it's about 80 students, that they get to know very well. It's in a kind of a similar to a block schedule. They have a three-hour back-to-back-to-back block schedule. So teachers can use that as an individual class, social studies, science, and English, or in some instances they can integrate their program and they might be able to use, as they do, maybe show a movie and they do some science experiment, a writing experiment, and do some social studies learning behind that. So they can use the block as a three-hour block if they so choose to do that. And we are seeing more and more of that happening. They are doing more integration in their programming, and I think that's important. The core really allows teachers a chance to get the students, get to know the students very well, and the students to get to know their teachers very well. It's kind of a sense of community. It's really important that they build that connection with them. And in addition to that, the students get to know other students, because we do have middle schools coming from three different middle schools, students coming from three middle schools. It's important that they do get a chance to know who those students are, and they get a chance to build some friendships with them. Again, they are randomly selected into their cores, so it is a random selection. It allows the teachers, and when talking to the teachers, the three words that come to mind all the time are they get a chance to communicate, not only with themselves, with each other, because they do have some common planning time, but they get a chance to meet with students, and they get a chance to meet with parents, and they can pool their resources, which I think are real critical pieces. They get a chance to collaborate together around research, around education, around programming. In some instances, the science teacher might say, you know what, we've got a really big test coming up on Friday. Can we maybe lighten the load and collaborate around lightening the load of homework on Thursday so that kids have a little bit more preparation time in the academic areas of preparing themselves for science? And I think it's also important, the last thing they always talk about is integrating curriculum, integrating the disciplines, being able to teach and to be able to use each other as resource personnel. One thing we decided, and it came from a group of the core teachers that I was meeting with last year, they really wanted to talk about and look at implementing ninth grade core study halls. We call them core support. So this year what we did is we implemented ninth grade core study halls. And in the past, ninth graders are in with 10th graders, 11th graders, and 12th graders, and sometimes those habits weren't the best. And so what we really tried to do is focus in on 25 ninth graders, and what we were able to do is pair them with two of their core teachers. And so immediately they were making a connection to other ninth grade core teachers, some being their own core teachers. The smaller learning environment, the benefit to that was that they were getting needed help in homework, they were getting help in study skills, behavior skills, organizational skills, and there was a personal attention from that particular core teacher. And so it was, I knew what you needed to do today, I knew what your assignment was, where are you at with it, let me check your assignment notebook, and it kind of was teaching kids how to do high school and how to look at things the Memorial way, what we all would expect. And so it provided an opportunity for almost a curriculum-based activity with just ninth graders. And again, by breaking it down with two teachers, it was down to about one per 12 students, which gives us a very good teaching ratio. The core study halls, also in, as Dr. Nass mentioned earlier, Memorial was blessed enough to get a smaller learning grant 7 years ago, and we were able to separate our school into learning communities. And so when there is a study hall area, people know that the Fox neighborhood is a study center, the Wolf neighborhood is a study center, but it gives all of our resource staff also an opportunity to meet with those students, and it provides opportunities for not only peer tutoring, mentor programming, staff-to-student relationships, but it gives students also an opportunity, particular ninth graders, to connect with one more adult in the building that they may not have had a chance to connect with. They've got seven teachers, they've got a guidance counselor, they've got a psychologist, they've got a social worker, but it gives them one more adult that they can connect with in the building, and I believe that's really important to students' development. The second piece really focuses on relationships, and this is the seventh year that we've been in a smaller learning community. The school was reorganized into four neighborhoods with 80 backyards, as I had discussed with Ms. Moss here a minute ago. Students were randomly assigned 9 through 12 to the neighborhoods, and again, those neighborhoods are the Fox, Rock, Wisconsin, and Wolf neighborhoods. In that leadership team, which is part of our neighborhood communication team, it includes an assistant principal, it includes an administrative assistant, a neighborhood secretary that you talk so highly of that many times knows the kids and are involved in those conversations. At ninth grade, we have allocated two counselors to our ninth grade students. So we have two counselors, one approximately 260 students. And then once they go beyond ninth grade, then we have a one counselor that does 10, 11, and 12 for each of the neighborhoods. So we have two ninth grade counselors that do two neighborhoods, and then we have a neighborhood counselor that just does the neighborhoods once they get to 10, 11, and 12. We have also shared, and again, we don't have the allocation to support individual allocations, but we have shared an ELL counselor, a minority services coordinator, a nurse, a psychologist, and a social worker. And those are the team approach that on a weekly basis gets a chance to talk about kids, talk about kids that what their needs are, what are some of the development strategies that might work, and just somehow make a connection. So if some student is falling through the cracks, somebody can use that neighborhood communication team as a case management piece to say, let me follow up and report back next week as to what's happening. Part of the neighborhoods, we're creating backyards. Students spend 4 years in their backyards. And again, randomly signed approximately 25 students with two teachers, and the sole purpose behind that is to build relationships, to get a chance to meet with 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders, and to some extent, those older adult students are providing mentoring experiences, tutoring experiences, and building relationships with some of the younger ones. It's given them a chance to say, we were there one time, we knew what that was about, we can help you through that. Backyards meets twice a week. We did meet once a week up until this week. The team that I met with, our innovation team, felt it important, and so did our staff, that we take a look at if relationships is an important piece and we really feel that students need to be connected to school, that 2 days a week, 20 minutes each day, was very important in terms of the purpose behind building relationships. Each backyard has two government reps, and they are elected by the students. And the government reps, obviously, that gives us 160 leaders immediately that meet once a week with my neighborhood coordinators. And they talk about plans, they talk about what things they think should happen with the school. It gives them a sounding board that they can come in and talk with me. And again, they have advisors in each of their neighborhoods, they have two neighborhood coordinators, and then what they do is they can act as a sounding board to me, centered around student government. Those student leaders also help out with our backyard activities. And again, remembering that part of our backyard activities were built around community activity, community service, relationship building. And I think this goes back to Ms. Karsten saying, we would love everyone to be in an athletic event or in athletics. We'd love everyone to be in extracurricular activities. It just doesn't always happen. So through our backyards, we would really like to have those students be connected to some school activities. Many times those activities are social. It builds relationships to the school. A lot of times it's get to know your fellow students. A lot of times it centers around school improvement projects. But some of the things this year that they've been able to do, and we're pretty proud of these and I want to make mention of them, during our homecoming activity week when everything is centered, Joe, around 9th grade, 10th grade, there's that competition of 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, they come together and this year they raised $12,000 with a Light of Life walk on Wednesday night that went to the Cancer and Leukemia Society. They collected 1,200 books as one of their projects to a Freedom to Read library program. This past week, they collected for the first month with our neighboring Wexford Ridge Community Center. They are doing a four-month food drive so that not only do we mass all kinds of food at one period of time in November, this is a November, December, a January, and a February event, so that it's a continuous type of activity. So throughout this whole thing, they have been able to build some community relationships and community activity. As I was leaving my office today, I saw the backyard curriculum sheet come through, and tomorrow they're starting to talk about Tots for Toys, which I think are critical elements of just getting kids involved with our community activities. During the spring of and the summer of 2007, our staff, student, and parents and community members convened to evaluate our neighborhood plans, to look at our smaller learning communities, and to make suggestions in terms of what we feel as a memorial community needs to happen to continue to move this to another level. In the future, we'd like to expand our school programming. We'd like to enhance the academic involvement and academic support and the career counseling piece within our backyards. I think we have the structure in place to do what the initial grant was looking for. It gives us a chance to add that career counseling piece over 4 years of high school. We do need to implement and allocate for a literacy coach. I think that is critical and it's something we need to do. And we are looking at implementing a comprehensive mentoring program to further connect our students to the adults at JMM and to train our upperclassmen as mentors to reach out to the middle schools initially to begin mentoring younger kids, younger students, is what it's like to be a Memorial High School student. The third piece that I'd like to share a little bit is our after-school program. And it was a specific need at JMM, and it talks about our after-school study center, and many of you may have heard about it. It initially was funded by the Madison Public Schools Foundation and the EVU Foundation. There was a $10,000 grant that was written. The purpose behind it is a number of us got together and just kind of saw an unused space after school, and that was the LMC. A lot of kids hanging around waiting for extracurricular activities to start, waiting around for athletics, waiting around for rides home, just hanging out because that was the safest place for them to be. And so we got together, and as a staff, we provided the LMC as a central place to work after school. Students needed the print and the electronic resources provided by the library. Students needed additional instructional time, and sometimes just to use the computer, to meet with teachers, to complete assignments. And again, students needed a place to just work and hang out in a supervised area while they're waiting for their after-school activities. The initial funding came from grants. Currently, those grants ran out, and I'm funding it out of my school budget because I believe and we believe that it's that critical to success at Memorial High School. Last year, one-third of Memorial High School students used the after-school center. Currently, we are seeing 40 to 50 students per night. That's Monday through Thursday. We currently have JMM staff going in on a regular basis. We have our MATC pre-collegiate minority program tutoring through the LMC. We have our Aspira program working through the LMC. We have our People program using the LMC for resources. And again, we have our LMC staff there that are the experts of the LMC, how to do research. And I think the critical thing here again, students having a place to go, students having a place to make connections with adults. In kind of closing, I wanted to just give you a couple comments for some students as we talk to them about why do you come to this place, why do you come to the LMC afterwards. And one ninth grade boy needing help in science said as he left and smiled, "That really helped. I'll be back." Another ninth grade girl said, "To use the library's computer because I don't have one at home." A third person said, "You have fun doing your homework. You are not alone." And a fourth young lady said, "There are more desks and tables and spaces available here because I don't have a place to study at home." Those are the kinds of relationships and connections we make with this after-school study center. It has been extremely successful for us. And I thank you for allowing us to share some thoughts and some ideas about what's currently happening at Memorial High School that ties in with the high school redesign.
Just want to talk a little bit about some of the key features of what we've been working on at West High School related to the smaller learning communities concept. Memorial High School, we were fortunate enough to be the recipients of a $500,000 grant from the federal government to implement a smaller learning communities model at West. One of the cornerstones of that program is the 9th and 10th grade core program. And what that is really an opportunity for 9th and 10th grade teachers along with counselors, support staff, special education teachers, as well as ESL teachers, to come together to create a smaller community of adults to work with students in just a smaller environment. We have 40 teachers at both the 9th and 10th grade level that really get to know their cohort of students very well. And what we do is really based on a staff development model that looks at collaboration, teacher collaboration. And this is it goes back to a middle school model of teacher collaboration, where teachers have an opportunity to really get to know their students and look at instructional strategies, look at curriculum, take the opportunity to identify if there's going to be a number of exams for kids in a given week, and maybe pull back in social studies or biology so that there's more balance for students. I think that the model has worked and has worked incredibly well, and the teachers are really learning a new skill. It seems like when I started at West, the high school model is more one of individual teachers who understand and work with their curriculum individually. And having had this opportunity to develop a culture of collaboration has really changed how we look at our practice in terms of teachers working together across content areas. When we look at social studies, English, science, and math, people at the high school level, teachers at the high school level, traditionally work in departmental areas and not necessarily across content areas. So this is a different way of looking at how you do business. Another key component is our resource time and our lunch and learn program. It's been one of our most successful programs. We went from a three-lunch period program that went over 2.5 hours in the middle of the day. And it was probably one of the most problematic structural programs that I've seen in my 18 years of being an administrator. And what we did was we condensed that 2.5 hour lunch period into one lunch period. It took a lot of work to convince the parents that it was okay to release 2,100 students into the West High School community at one time. I think that, one of the comments from the parent community was that, well, what are we going to do when you release all the kids at that time? It's going to be sex, drugs, and rock and roll in our streets. And I had to do a lot of work in convincing them that it would be structured time, and so that we would not just have a set number of administrators, security, and our ERO and supervising students, but we would have our entire teaching staff that would work to support constructive educational activities during this resource time over lunch. We went from not having any structured activities to having over 110 different clubs and organizations that meet in the middle of the day. What that does is it gives access and opportunity to students who previously may not have had an opportunity to be involved in clubs and activities, a chance to be involved. And again, that's one of the cornerstones of smaller learning communities, and that is connection and engagement of all students. Another important aspect of our smaller learning communities is resource halls. It's similar to our traditional study hall, but the difference here is that we have our underclassmen who go to the resource hall, our freshmen and our sophomores, and they get assistance from our upperclassmen. So it's a peer mentoring program. We have something called the Honor Guard, where we have students who have been successful in some of the core content areas that act as tutors for our underclassmen. And it's really been a successful peer mentoring and peer tutorial program where the underclassmen really develop important relationships with the upperclassmen. Our freshman advisory is a component of our lunch and learn program. The freshman advisory program is similar to what we do in our resource halls, where we have our freshmen come in, our ninth graders come in, and a developmental guidance approach where our upperclassmen talk about what it takes to be successful at West High School. And we have an instructional leader, a teacher, that instructs our upperclassmen, our 11th and 12th graders, on how to kind of advise our freshman group. And what it's done is create a bridge between our underclassmen and our upperclassmen. It's difficult for our freshmen to really feel comfortable when they communicate with our upperclassmen, and it's an opportunity to develop relationships that would not normally happen in a traditional high school setting. So it's been an incredible opportunity to develop relationships and engagement between underclassmen and upperclassmen. Embedded honors is a academic focus where we look at the curriculum. Teachers have an opportunity to give extended learning opportunities to students who want to check the challenge and rigor in traditional classes, say in biology. A student can come in and say, I want to do the honors component of ninth grade biology. And the teacher will develop a plan in that classroom where those students have an opportunity to do extension projects, and they will receive a designation on their report card that they've completed a higher standard of curriculum in the classroom where traditional curriculum is also taking place. These are just a few of the cornerstone points of our Smaller Learning Communities program. We're very proud of what we've been able to accomplish over the past 4.5 years. And Joe Carl Smith talked about where we're going to come up with the money to continue some of these concepts and initiatives that we've been looking at in our high school redesign. It really is a challenge to continue what you started when the dollars, the resources go away. But as Mr. Rainwater pointed out, it's a redistribution of the resources as opposed to necessarily looking for new dollars to implement what it is we're looking at. And that's what we've done over the course of the last year and a half to continue what we started with the Smaller Learning Communities grant. Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you so very much for letting me briefly talk about a topic that I'm very passionate about. I have the great fortune to work in a smaller learning community with innovative staff. I wish that great fortune on all my colleagues. Just like my colleagues, our student population is dramatically changing. Over the past 8 years, I have found that our students coming to Shabazz have their needs and their challenges and their negative exposures have amplified. When working with these committed colleagues, we've shared ideas, and we at Shabazz are implementing some of the ideas that are already happening at some of the big high schools because we're finding our student population truly has that need. One of the things that we are working towards implementing is these mutual support meetings. We have found that our students could use a little bit further support in developing relationships amongst their peers, so they would have this group of peers that would follow them throughout their years at Shabazz. Along with what we're looking at is much like Pergolder time and the neighborhood time, in that we have a group of students that are working with two staff, and their focus is looking over their profiles, their academic profiles, seeing how many credits they have in English and how many more they need to graduate, using that time to possibly introduce WISC careers, which is very important for our kids to have those goals out in the future also. Our ties with MATC are strengthening each and every year. We've had 6 classes articulated with MATC for a number of years, thanks to the great innovation of staff members there. We are looking at now working with their apprenticeship programs. We'd like to bring their apprenticeship programs into our school. We have it formally set up for December an all-school meeting on that, but then to bring them in throughout the rest of the year. Lunch and learn. We've had a lunch program where our orientation class
receive grants to provide Friday lunches to all our students. We thought that since we had them in a captive audience, we would use that time to then add on some learning component, like bringing in resources from the community around vocational, mental health supports, and those sort of things. We also have developed innovative teams. I have some of the most creative staff members on my staff, and they're working together voluntarily, putting in time early before school, a couple of days out of the month, to discuss issues that are happening at Shabazz and how we can eliminate more barriers that our students have and increase their academic achievement. We've always had, thanks to Shane Hamakovalowski, service learning has been a huge part of our curriculum for over 13 years now. We find that weaving the curriculum into actual needed service in our community and having the students reflect on that work they've done truly helps ingrain with those students the knowledge that they've learned. Character education was something we brought into the program. Again, Jane helped us with that a number of years ago, and we find that those two, service learning and character education, definitely complement each other. So with our community supports that come through this type of curriculum development, it really allows our students to develop their critical thinking skills. Those are the things that truly, as our global economy changes, our students need. And so this gives them the chance to develop their critical thinking skills and develop their civic involvement. We are not a business. We are not producing gadgets that are supposedly going to make our lives a little bit easier until they break or are recalled. We are a comprehensive educational system that are producing leaders, change agents, that will affect all of our lives much longer than any gadget can. So we need to know these children individually. We need to come to where they are, and we need to take them to where they want to be. And that's what smaller learning communities can do. Thank you.
That's our presentation for this evening. I can assure you we will be back before you at numerous times in the future. At least, hopefully, you will invite us for that opportunity. And I hope you got a real sense tonight of the joy that I have in my work here in Madison, working with these five individuals. And I hope you can hear in what they reported, and in as you viewed our best thinking to date, how much we care about the work that we do. High school kids mean a great, great deal to all of us who are involved in this work. So thank you for your not only attention this evening, but also for your questions, your suggestions, and obviously my door is always open on the suggestion end of things. So thank you very much.
Let me say a couple of things to wrap up. 14 years ago when I came here, we were 46 at that time, totally individual siloed schools. Not only was each school completely independent of every other school, but there was a level of pride in not working together. It was actually a badge of honor. And the 14 years that I've worked here have been a wonderful privilege. But the thing I'm proudest of, and I think we've done a lot of good things, the thing I'm proudest of is what you see here tonight, which reflects, I think, what the whole school system is now, which is a whole group of people working together around all of our kids. And you would not have seen five principals sitting here 14 years ago working together and sharing each other's stuff. We really had the opinion that if we didn't invent it, it couldn't possibly be any good, because we would have thought of it first. So I think one of the greatest steps we've made, and one of the things that's enabled us to go forward, has been the ability to really work together. We're fortunate in Madison to have some extraordinary staff, and to have an opportunity for that staff to work with some really extraordinary people at the University of Wisconsin, and that whole group willing to share, recognize we don't know everything, and learn from each other has been a tremendous step forward. And I want to thank all of you who have been a part of that over the years, because it was not an easy change to make. So thank all of you.
I guess it's time to go. I'd like to thank all of you on behalf of the board for all of your time and all of your effort, not only in putting the presentation together, but what you do on a daily basis for all of our students in the Madison Metropolitan School District. It is not an easy job what you do, and we truly appreciate, again, your efforts, your energies, and how much you care for our students. It's obvious in what you've said in your presentations this evening, and again, it is appreciated. So thank you very much. And with that, one more thing. Other business? There is no other business. Do I have a motion to adjourn? You have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Mr. Carlson?